Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk show host, Randy Fine. While struggling to lose or maintain weight, many people sacrifice a lot, their social life and their love of good food and dining out. But tipping the scales doesn't necessarily have to be a consequence of enjoying gourmet food in restaurants, near home or abroad. There's a way to live luxuriously, become friends with food, and be healthy without having to resort to fad diets and results that don't last. Through the Restaurant Diet book series, today's special guest, the healthy global gourmet, Fred Bellacci, a food influencer on diet and weight loss strategy who lost 150 pounds in 1 year while living La Dolce Vita, the sweet life, empowers readers by giving them permission to continue to enjoy the fine foods, wines, and restaurants they love, rather than prescribing an unrealistic regimen to achieve lasting success. Fred Bellacci is the healthy global gourmet, an international influencer on diet and weight loss strategy. Since establishing his company, Fred Bellacci Enterprises in 2014, Bellacci has worked with hundreds of top chefs and written about restaurants, hotels, spas, wineries, and purveyors of gourmet fare and exciting travel destinations around the globe, sharing delicious recipes and tips for fitness and spiritual well-being along the way while also helping coach and motivate hundreds of people to lose thousands of pounds. So I know you want to meet Fred, and we're going to get started. Let me introduce you. Good morning, Fred, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning, Randy. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Yes, it's a pleasure to have you. You have a very interesting story. And, you know, there's so many books and things out on weight loss and, you know, different strategies. But your story resonated with me because of the process and how easy it is and how it just fits into anybody's life. So I really, really wanted my listeners to hear you. You said in your book And we're going to start off like this. You said in your book, in your world, food meant love. Can you explain that to us, what you meant by that?
Well, I grew up Italian-American in Long Island, New York. I came from a large family, no pun intended. Many of my relatives were overweight as well, but we were a big family and were exposed to great food. We were surrounded by it. My aunt owned restaurants. My grandparents were amazing cooks, aunts, uncles. My mom's a great cook. So Sunday dinners, which like the whole family would get together, I mean like 15, 20, 25 people. I mean, they'd eat for 3 hours. This was how I grew up. I mean, there'd be antipasto and soups and salad and all different kinds of seafoods and meat, cold cuts, cheeses, a lot of imported Italian things. Different people would bring things, you know, whoever's house, and there'd be so much food. And then there'd be dessert and I mean, the adults would have wine and cocktails and play cards. And I mean, these things would go on for hours. So Sundays were like holidays. Even a regular weeknight meal was pretty extraordinary. I mean, the food was delicious. And when we went out to eat, it was not to like fast food places or anything like typical kids. I mean, my lunchbox at school was often a gourmet hero sandwich from an Italian deli or leftover lasagna or meatballs or whatever we made for dinner the night before. So I wasn't growing up on PB&J or anything like that. It was kind of like the scene from My Big Fat Greek Wedding when Tula went to school for the first time and got made fun of, like, what's all this stuff in your lunchbox? Like, how come we don't have these things in our lunchbox? So I grew up with so much good food, and I mean, my family members, I suppose my grandparents survived the Great Depression. They were Italian immigrants from Naples and Sicily, and they made it through lean times growing up in New York and raising families after the Depression and World War II, and they achieved success. They were living the American dream, and I grew up in the 70s and 80s in New York in this family that they didn't ever want to see anybody go hungry at their tables. And I think that was a lot of their depression mentality and post-war abundance, that they were going to share their love of food. And really, it's a passion for life. And it really goes back to Old World Italy, where food really is synonymous with love and life, hospitality. I mean, there's nothing better. I've lived in Italy for over a year of my life, and the greatest thing that you could do for somebody is cook them a meal or bake them a cake or something from your kitchen. It's like literally from your heart and soul. So that's really where food comes in. I mean, food was celebratory. It was an expression of love and family, abundance, success. I mean, and on the flip side, food was also there when people weren't happy, such as sad occasions like funerals. I mean, everybody was eating and drinking. Also, people used food in my family as a substitute for dealing with emotional things such as divorce or death or just any unhappiness. It was really the default coping mechanism was eating something. I mean, it was easier to stare down a delicious plate of lasagna than to deal with a breakup or loss
right,
of a loved
right.
one or whatever. And
so this is deeply ingrained in you. This is deeply ingrained in you, both now and just genetically. I mean, this is, you go way back. So I would assume, or actually in your book, you know, you were an overweight kid. What was that like?
Well, I grew up with all this great food, and my parents divorced when I was 5. And really, the only common thing that remained in my life, the common thread between my fractured two families now, was that everybody still liked to eat, everybody still liked to cook, and everybody still liked to eat out. You know, great restaurants, and they were all foodies. And that was really the only place that I really found any solace, was in the kitchen or at the dinner table or out at a nice restaurant with, you know, either of my parents or other relatives. I was an only child, and I went to a small private school at the time growing up in Long Island, and I was the only kid whose parents were divorced, so it felt like I was carrying a scarlet letter. I was different. I was ashamed and really didn't make or have a lot of friends. I didn't want to open up. I didn't want to bring anybody home. I went to other people's houses, but I would never invite anybody to my house because, you know, my family dynamics were different. So the only way that I knew to cope, I mean, it was the easy default way that I was taught my entire life, was to eat. Food was comfort. I mean, my dad was a doctor. I mean, he knew better, but I mean, he, during the divorce of my mom, gained at least 50 pounds in a year just eating in the middle of the night. I watched him. I was a kid. I didn't know what he was doing, but there was way more food than he possibly could need. This is beyond having an abundant Sunday dinner or a holiday feast or enjoying food. This was stuffing yourself. This was emotional. This was not a healthy behavior. So I learned these things. So by the time I was in the fifth grade, so middle school, a few years later, fast forward to the time I was about 10, I'd become the fattest kid in school. I was not just the lonely, reclusive kid who didn't want to hang out with anybody and was shy and fearful because I didn't want anybody to know about my life at home and my family dynamics. All of a sudden, I was over 200 pounds at 10 years old. I was a walking billboard telling the world that I'm really unhappy and things are very messed up and just basically to leave me alone, except that a fat 200-pound 10-year-old in middle school, that's an easy target. So I became the victim of naturally teasing. My nickname became Fat Fred. I mean, but it got a heck of a lot worse than that. I mean, there was a bunch of older kids. I mean, my school went from like pre-K all the way through high school, and sometimes the students would cross paths with each other. So, I mean, I was the biggest kid. I probably weighed more than like the biggest high school senior there. So a lot of the older boys would come up to me. I mean, I was physically abused and picked on and tormented, not just by other 10-year-olds. So it was really a horrible way to live, and I didn't know what else to do but keep eating. I knew that I needed to lose weight. I needed to get my life under control, but it was beyond my grasp at the time. My family was busy fighting, and I was left to fend for myself in a hostile school with hostile kids that were picking on me because of my weight. And the only thing that I could do was go home, and instead of cry, I would eat. So it just made it worse.
That is so sad. Well, talk about, you know, scarring you for life. I mean, that is so, so difficult to...
It's taken years to deal with.
...to reckon with. Yeah, I'm sure. In your book, you say that you were desperate for answers to questions like, why were you here? Why were you going through all this? This is in your adult, as an adult.
Right, right.
And you didn't find satisfactory answers through religion. So you started exploring spirituality. And this is
right.
This is what sparks my interest, because I'm very interested in all aspects of spirituality. So you had an experience with psychic Jeffrey Wands. What was that?
Yes.
What was your experience? What happened there?
Well, a little bit of background. As you said, I really didn't find any answers with religion and felt like I was being punished. Like I was a bad person. And of course there were things that I had said and done, or maybe not said or done or whatever. I mean, throughout the course of my life, I mean, I was close to 30 years old at this point that I started exploring spirituality. I had 3 degrees. I was a successful lawyer. I had an MBA. I mean, you would think everything going for me, but I felt like a vacant, hollow, bombed out shell of a person. And I was watching my father battle stage 4 cancer. I was really his caregiver, and I knew I was going to lose him. And I mean, it was like the fear of abandonment instilled when he moved out when I was 5 that I never got over. So it's like, okay, now he might actually die. And it's like, I'm here. I was over 300 pounds. I was 330 pounds for 5 years. And really unhappy. I had pre-diabetes, high blood pressure, sleep apnea. I mean, it hurt to even walk to go get the mail. So I started reading. I mean, I read pretty much every weight loss book there was. I tried every diet there was. I went to 2 residential treatment centers for weight loss, one in Miami, one in North Carolina. They're both renowned, and really saw through those places as far as the weight loss component goes. Everything that didn't work was what helped me figure out the dietary portion that would. But as far as the spirituality goes, I felt like I was being punished and I wanted answers. So I started reading books by some of the renowned psychic mediums of our day. And I read a lot of them. I mean, I'm a voracious reader. I spent a lot of time reading, trying to find answers, like looking outside myself for something, some shred of hope that, you know, that I'm not a bad person, or there's something more, or some reason, some meaning of this. Like, what do I do with my life? Like, I'm drowning. I'm 330 pounds. I have no way out. I've yo-yo dieted. I've, like, lost 30, 40, 50 pounds before, and it always came back, and I felt like a miserable, undisciplined, fat failure of a person. Like, I could never find love. I could never date. I could never do anything. And now, like, the only thing that I'm, like, really responsible for, I'm not responsible for, but I thought I was, like, my father's dying of cancer, and what's the point to all this? Like, are we just here to suffer? So I read books by a psychic from Long Island, where I'm from, Jeffrey Wands, and a lot of what he said really resonated, and a lot of, I would say, paranormal things were happening in my life, like dreams and lights going on and off in the middle of the night in the house, and the doorbell ringing and nobody there, and like signs, messages from departed loved ones. I mean, things that really didn't make any sense. So one night, this was maybe a couple of years before I ended up losing the 150 pounds. I believe I died in my sleep. I went through a tunnel of light rapidly. You know, like the light's almost like a subway tube, and the lights just keep coming faster and faster, and I get out on the other side, and it's a bright light, and there's a hand that comes up telling me to stop, like, this is not your time. And then, like, the mist clears, and the light, the brightness tones down to the point that I could see what was going on, and I could experience what was there, and I met many of my deceased loved ones, grandparents, aunts, uncles. And we had quite a conversation, and they told me that I needed to go back. It wasn't my time. I needed to lose weight and get my priorities straight, that I was a decent, likable, lovable person, and I would figure out a way to do it, that I would go on and find happiness and purpose in this life, that I wasn't meant to die, that a lot of bad things had happened to me in my life, and it wasn't my fault. I wasn't a bad person, that I should forgive myself, and that I would find a way, I would find happiness, I would find love, and I would go on and I would inspire other people to change their lives. So, I mean, long story short, I don't know how long that lasted or what exactly I believe I did die and go to the other side and was sent back. But I got sent back into my overweight body, and a couple of things happened as a result of that. First thing was, I felt this overwhelming sense of peace, like for the first time in my life. Like, I felt peaceful. Like, I'm not this fat, overweight, unhappy person who's had all this bad stuff happen to him. Like, I'm a lot more than this, and there's a lot more to this whole schematic called life than who we physically look like and what we do and the number on the scale and what people call you, the names and the horrible insults and the bad things they do to you, that we're a lot more than that. So I was able to somewhat detach from that and embrace this whole notion that, okay, maybe I am actually a soul having a human experience, and there is a reason for all this. And the second thing was, I no longer feared death. I was going to lose my father in the matter of maybe months, a year or two at the most. I mean, and for the first time, I was able to look at it like I missed all my deceased loved ones. But I knew deep down that I had just seen them, that they're there, they're watching, and they're cheering me on, that we're not separate from them. It just looks like we're separate. It's an illusion. So all this stuff happened, and meanwhile, I have family up in New York that I see quite often, and one of my cousins up there, he and his wife were visited by the apparition of my grandfather, and I was going to be in New York the next week, and they were kind of just, like, totally stunned. So we decide to get an appointment to go see Jeffrey Wands, a psychic. He's in Port Washington, Long Island. And you know, his appointments were like 9 months out. So like, okay, I'll book an appointment. But lo and behold, as luck would have it, he was having a show that week and there were tickets available. So we decided to go. So my first experience ever with a psychic or any of this stuff, we're in an auditorium, there may be 1,500 people, and he's walking around the room, literally walking up to people and telling them things that were ostensibly from their lost loved ones. And people were in tears, and oh my God, and how did you know this? And this went on for an hour, and I'm just like thinking, you know, if this was my grandfather, my father's father, Tony Bellacci, I mean, he was a force to be reckoned with when he was alive, and I would believe, I mean, having gone to the other side and seen him, and that I believed a lot of the interaction and a lot of the things going on, the paranormal stuff in my house and everywhere, and plus my cousin seeing him, were from my grandfather, that he was trying to tell us something. I figured he was telling us that, you know, Fred, you're a big fat failure, like, you know, get your head out of your rear end and, like, do something with your life. So that's what I was thinking he was trying to tell me, like the obvious. But so I figured my grandfather was very, very persistent in life. It's like, you know, if the door was closed, it's like he'd break the window to get in. He'd find a way. So I was expecting, okay, during this first hour, like anytime Jeffrey Wands walked down the aisle or came close to, like, close to us, it's like my heart was like thumping out of my chest. Like I was expecting, like, my grandfather would make a ceiling tile land on this man's head to get a message to us. Nothing like that happened. But during the intermission, he walked right over to me. I was there with my family, and he walks right over to me and says, I have a heavy older gentleman named Anthony who has a message for you. He's your grandfather. I'm like, oh my God, I nearly dropped my drink. So I believe the whole thing. I ended up getting in to see Jeffrey Wands, and it was my two grandfathers came through and said, you're going to lose 150 pounds and you're going to go on to inspire a lot of people and really change the way the world looks at weight loss and really life, that you're going to rise above all this stuff that's happened to you, that this was all this, what you perceived as suffering was all for a reason. And you're going to come out just fine. You know, and it's going to take time. It's going to be a process. It's going to last you the rest of your life. It's not just, you know, you're going to tape your mouth shut and go lose 150 pounds. I mean, anybody can lose weight, but it's the spiritual journey. It's the looking inside. It's the dealing with all the emotional stuff and working to become better versions of ourselves, which is what I wrote, why I wrote the books, which is what I tell the clients that I work with, my coaching clients. It's way more than just a nutritionist, you know, finding food groups and a meal plan and dining out and cooking and shopping strategies that work for you, like, you know, how many calories and then developing a fitness plan. I mean, yeah, that's all important. And I started seeing a therapist. I was in support groups and all of that's great, but it's really making peace with ourselves. It's peeling back layers mm-hmm. of the onion as we go through this process and discovering missing pieces of ourselves, hidden talents we didn't know we had. I mean, I've done things since losing the weight that I never imagined I would do, like run marathons or climb mountains. I mean, amazing things. I never thought that I'd write a book. I never thought that I would be a public speaker. I was so ashamed and so afraid to ever, like, get up on a stage. I mean, even like in like middle school plays, I mean, now I have no problem. I mean, I'll get up and talk in front of 500 people and it's fine. And I'll make them laugh and I'll enjoy doing it. And it's a totally different life. It's like who I really was all along, buried underneath these layers of fat. I call them protective layers, that it's just like, right. I was hurt, I was abused, and I put on all this weight, really basically is like a giant billboard to leave me alone, to stay away, that I right. couldn't get hurt. If you wouldn't get close to me, you couldn't hurt me. So it's really peeling back all those layers.
So after you lost, because I have some questions I want to ask you. After you lost 150 pounds, you said life wasn't as magical as you expected it to be. And you looked for relationships to complete you, like you weren't enough.
Right.
Called yourself codependent. So what did that feel like?
Well, I mean, I was walking around now at 180 pounds instead of 330 pounds. It's like, I really, when I was so overweight, I never really identified or related or totally grasped just how heavy I was. I see the pictures now and I can't believe that was me. I see the pants. I've kept a couple pairs of pants and jackets. And I mean, I could literally fit two of me in. But they call it body dysmorphic image, that you just really have no concept that it's basically, I mean, it's like my metabolism is forever messed up, because getting to be that overweight, it totally wreaks havoc. Your metabolism goes haywire. So when I got to be, you know, a healthy weight and gone through the process, lost the 150 pounds, and I was kind of lost, like deer in the headlights. It's like, okay, I look great. I mean, I feel pretty good. I'm able to do things that I never could have imagined. But it's like, all right, I'm 30 years old now, but I have the dating skills of maybe a middle schooler. Like, I hadn't dared go out with anybody more than one or two times. And it was like, I never wanted to talk about myself. I felt I was awkward and clumsy and, you know, tried to mask the insecurities by ordering food or letting the other person do all the talking. I mean, I didn't know what to say. I didn't know how to date or how to be, you know, really how to function in the world. I mean, I learned from my education. I was able to perform as a lawyer. I mean, but that was different. I mean, these are social skills that was really like missed developmental steps that I had to go back. And there's really no way except learning through trial and error. It's like, okay, you never learned how to ride a bike. You're 30 years old, you get on a two-wheeler and you probably fall off. You know, just because you're 30 years old doesn't mean that you know how to do everything that a normal 30-year-old would. So it's like, okay, so you start with the training wheels. It might be a little bit embarrassing and you might fall and you might scrape your knees a few times, but eventually through trial and error, you get the hang of it. So I had to start going on dates. I mean, asking out women who were 25, 30 years old, my age, who odds are had a lot more dating experience than I did, and basically be vulnerable for the first time in my life. And you know, and it started out, I mean, it was awkward. I mean, there were times that I was kind of apologetic for myself, or would talk so much about my weight loss or about, you know, what race I was going to be running, and just like, you know, and there were times that I was overly eager. I mean, trying to buy things or take girls on trips, or I rushed into an engagement that ended badly because I was desperate. It's like, oh wow, this girl who I've been going out with for a couple of months really, really likes me and is acknowledging me for the first time, like not rejecting me. It's like, I should put a ring on it because she's going to run away. You know, she'll find out who I really am and she'll be history. So naturally, I mean, anything that's forced isn't meant to be, it isn't good, it won't last. And I had to become comfortable with myself. So I had to learn through a series of a number of relationships. I mean, it was like a crash course in dating. I mean, I ended up being engaged twice in the last 10 years. I mean, ended up planning a wedding and getting hurt both times, but learning each time that, okay, finally the end result was I'm now 42. It's like, I have the dating skills of a 42-year-old. I'm not married yet, but I know what I'm looking for in a mate. I know what I offer. And I don't have to apologize for myself. I don't have to buy anybody. I don't have to pretend to be anything other than who I am, that I'm okay. That's an amazing pleasing result of all this. And that's not something you get from dieting, from a typical weight loss plan. This is something you get by doing the mental, emotional gymnastics and by going out and facing everything that you feared for all these years, all the things that were holding me back that would have inevitably, had I not dealt with them, led me to gain the weight back or maybe engage in other harmful behaviors. I mean, typically, for instance, people quit smoking, they gain a lot of weight, like in the weeks or months that follow. Many people that lose weight or, you know, restrict their food plans too severely, they go back to overeating or doing what they used to, or maybe they'll start drinking too much or doing drugs or doing other things. That it's really an oral dependency, and it's the emptiness, it's the feeling of lack, this void, you know, that something is missing inside that drives people like my former self and millions of people out there to look for external substances to try to fill that seemingly bottomless hole. And the more you try to shove down that hole, the more elusive it becomes. You're never going to be able to satisfy yourself by anything
so
external, whether it be a person or a food or a drink or whatever.
So let's switch gears now, because I know that my listeners would like to know how to eat out every night and lose weight, or sort of get some kind of feel for it. So I want to switch gears and talk about the way you did this, the way you actually lost the weight by eating out in restaurants. So let me first ask you, what is a typical diet mentality? What do people normally think when they're trying to lose weight?
Well, a typical diet mentality, I mean, having been somebody who's been a so-called dieter for several decades of my life, I mean, successful sometimes at taking weight off, but not successful at keeping it off. Basically, to me, diet meant deprivation. Diet meant a short-term means to an end. It's like there's an expression, this too shall pass, or we could do anything.
Right.
No matter how intolerable, for 24 hours. And it's like, that's kind of how I looked at it. It's like, okay, I'm going to go on this horrible diet, you know, maybe, you know, set myself up. You know, there's a couple ways to do it. It's like, I want to lose 20 pounds in 2 months. So it's like, okay, I'm going to do this extreme whatever for 2 months or 20 pounds, whatever comes first. Then what? It's like, okay, yay, it's over. We can party. But that's why so many diets fail or ultimately result in relapse, because they're just so unpalatable. Like, I went to a place in Miami a renowned weight loss center, and it's just going to tell this story briefly, because it was really the diets that didn't work were what really inspired the one that did as far as the food plan. So the place in Miami, we sit down. It's a very nice place. It's like a nice restaurant, bone china, candlelight, tablecloths. And you get a menu, and it's like you could have like a 4-ounce piece of grilled chicken breast, or, 4-ounce steak, or, you know, and all just like steamed vegetables. I mean, like very, like no carbs or anything like that. I mean, the only seasonings available were sodium-free Mrs. Dash and Tabasco. And I'm thinking, like, this is nuts. I'm like, how the heck is anybody going to do this for the rest of their lives? Because obviously, okay, you do this. I mean, maybe you could do it for a couple of weeks. I mean, I needed to lose over 100 pounds. I'm going to do this for a year or more. So I'm like, and no wonder. It's like there's people at my table. This is their sixth time back at this place. It's like, we're coming back for a tune-up. Or, it really didn't work because I went home. It's like, you know, I want olive oil. I want salt, pepper. I want butter. I want this. I want that. So first night I'm there, I asked for the wine list. The whole room's cackling. So I'm like, this isn't going to work. But I tried it. I lost 6 pounds doing this nonsense for a week, and naturally went out. You know, this was in Miami, went to Joe's Stone Crab for lunch that day and a couple other places that weekend, gained the 6 pounds back by Monday morning. So it's like, okay, big fat failure. So I go to another place in North Carolina and decide I took a month off from my life, from my work, from my responsibilities, and decided I'd go. I mean, this is a couple years later. I was desperate. I mean, 330 pounds. So I go, and we work with a nutritionist and doctors and do medical workups, which is really critical to as a prerequisite to starting any major diet or lifestyle change, exercise, any major change at all, just to see that, you know, you don't have any underlying conditions, maybe hormones, cholesterol, heart problems, anything that might preclude you from healthy exercise or might maybe tweak the meal plan, like, okay, so you're diabetic or you've got high cholesterol. So, I mean, that would obviously adjust what you're going to eat. But we did all that, and then we go to eat, and it's like your high school cafeteria. There's like a lunch line and very basic stuff, and except it's not like your typical buffet. You hand your card that was approved by the nutritionist to the person behind, who basically scoops a few things of unappealing food onto your plate and, you know, wishes you bon appetit. And then you sit down with all the other inmates who we're all exchanging stories about our favorite foods and our favorite restaurants and how long we've been 500 pounds or whatever it is. And it's just a horrible way to try to lose weight. I did it for a week. I lost 5 pounds. And naturally, I was in North Carolina and I traveled a lot for business and pleasure. I mean, we planned trips around a certain restaurant reservation even. So I decided, all right, they had the internet back in, this was like 2007 or whatever. So I go online and I'm looking up like, okay, what if I were here, not at this weight loss facility, where would I want to be eating? Because naturally the mind goes to exactly what it can't have. It's like, I'm obsessing about the food I can't be eating because the stuff here is so bad. So I found 3 restaurants within walking distance of where I was staying, a nice Italian restaurant, a Japanese sushi place, and a Brazilian steakhouse. I'm like, these are all like reasonable places that I could be eating at if I weren't stuck here. So instead of being like, okay, like I'm going to go AWOL or whatever else, I said, you know, you're smart enough to be able to go into one of these places and disciplined enough to make reasonable choices within the calorie budget that you worked out with the nutritionist, make good choices, enjoy real food in a real setting, and not overdo it, and be grateful for the opportunity to do it this way instead of eating the slop back at the place that, I mean, most of us considered inedible, and we're back in the dormitory, 11 o'clock at night, you hear a knock on the door down the hall, somebody's getting Pizza Hut delivered, and somebody else went off the wagon. It's like, that's not how you want to lose weight. So I decided, okay, I'm going to try this for a week. I'd eat breakfast and lunch at the place, and I would go to these 3 restaurants for dinner, you know, make choices. I read the menus in advance online and pretty much had an idea what I was going to have, figured out, guesstimated the calories. And when I got to the first restaurant, first day ever doing this restaurant dieting, I told my server and exactly what I was doing, that I escaped from the place down the road, you know, the weight loss facility, the fat farm, whatever you want to call it. You know, had anybody else done that? You know, I said, well, nobody's ever admitted if they had, but we won't tell anyone. I said, good, just in case they send anybody looking for me, I'm not here. So I engaged the staff, and they were more than happy to accommodate, like, you know, not bring the bread basket or not tell me about the dessert special. And they worked with me and made it an actually pleasant experience. I had real food in a real setting. I ordered a glass of wine. I mean, my diet allows you to have a drink. I did it 6 days a week during even the toughest phase one of my 4-phase weight loss plan, that no other diet that I'd ever gone on allowed that kind of freedom or flexibility. Did it the next night at the Japanese place, a nice sushi roll, some sashimi, a nice ginger salad, and some miso soup. Might have had a Japanese beer. I mean, you know, a nice real meal in a real place with real people. Third night, did it at a Brazilian steakhouse, some slices of meat, some salad, soup, glass of wine. Did this, repeated it again the rest of the week. End of the week, I lost 5 more pounds. Decided, wow, I might be onto something. So I did it again the following week, lost 5 more pounds. So I said, well, I'm spending God knows how much a week to be at this place. Why don't I just go home and start the restaurant diet? So ultimately, that's what I did. I did it at my favorite restaurants at home, wherever I traveled. I had to introduce myself as no longer Fat Fred, like their best customer who'd order enough for 3 or 4 people. like I was always afraid going out to eat. I mean, most diets tell you to avoid restaurants. You're not in control, et cetera, et cetera. They try to upsell you. I always felt like, you know, I'm like their number one customer. I order so much food that they're going to think there's something wrong. I mean, they're going to like spit in my food if I decide like I'm going to order a petite filet and grilled asparagus and a baked sweet potato and don't tell me about the bread basket and I'm only having one glass of wine tonight. But I decided I would go in and do exactly that in a nice way and just reintroduce myself to places that I'd been going, that I was a known overeater, and in new places. And I got a really warm, wonderful reception from 99% of places I went into that people
That's
didn't
awesome.
Think I was a
That's
picnic.
Awesome. So you talked about the four easy to follow phases that are tailored, or you know, that can be tailored to each of
right.
our specific situations. What are the four phases?
Well, first phase, phase one, I call beginning. I actually use the acronym BOCA because I was living in Boca Raton at the time in South Florida. So BOCA means mouth. So the four phases, one is beginning, two is opportunity, and phase two is after I lost 10% of my body weight, I'll get into that I'm able to exercise more and make more foods available. Step three is challenge. By this point, this is like 6 months into it, I'm exercising more, able to up the calorie budget and have a lot more foods available. I mean, basically, by the time I got to the fourth phase, which is acceptance after I lost the weight, or achievement, I should say, achievement. I mean, it is acceptance, accepting yourself. But the achievement phase is the forever phase. And it's really being able to eat anything you want in moderation with a couple of caveats. One, that you can eat it like a civilized person, like put your utensils down in between bites, not come back for seconds, not obsess about it. And the next thing is that it's within your calorie budget. I mean, okay, if I could have 2,000 calories a day, you know, I could still be within my calorie budget having a bottle of red wine and six chocolate chip cookies. But is that really what my body needs? So it's through this process I learned what my body really needs. And really, it needs a balance of foods. I mean, food is nutrition. Food should be enjoyed. Food is about enjoyment and pleasure, but it's eating from different food groups and learning to enjoy and make the food healthier at home, buying the best, seeking out the best in the markets, the best in the restaurants, and making choices that are good for us. So the first phase was really a jump start. So I took out a lot of things like carbs and refined sugar and limited alcohol consumption because I really wasn't that active. I couldn't walk or do very much. I mean, I started walking every day, you know, a half hour in the morning and maybe 20 minutes at night. And eventually it got easier. The weight started coming off. And I did a cleanse day every day in phase one, which I did it on Sunday, was the easiest I was off, where it was basically just fruits, vegetables, smoothies, things like that. And I still do it from time to time that I'll make a healthy smoothie for breakfast, maybe have a salad for lunch, maybe some fruit for dinner or dessert, another smoothie, things like it really helps the body reset. It's a good thing to do to give the body and the digestive system a break, especially after years of abuse, and drink a lot of water, things like green tea. And I lost 10% of my body weight in 2 months, got through the holidays, which is where we are now and typically the toughest time to be on a diet. Many people gain 5 to 10 pounds between Thanksgiving and New Year's, and I was no different for many years. And you know, everybody gets, you know, these ideas of New Year's resolutions in January and you know, I'm going to take the weight off. And I even had a challenge in my family, which I won 1 year that I lost the largest percentage of my body weight. I don't know what the heck it was, maybe 30 or 40 pounds in 3 months. And I forget what we won. We had money in a pot. I mean, everybody, it was a nice thing, but I starved myself. I did whatever I possibly could to lose the weight so I'd win the contest. And then as soon as I lost whatever, I didn't continue and lose more. I gained it back. So phase two, I decided that, okay, the exercise was consistent. It was enjoyable. I was walking regularly every day. I was walking further, faster, and I had no slips as far as food. And I decided that it was okay to reintroduce some foods that were possibly, I would say, problem foods or foods that I often overdid it with, just to see if I could do it. And really because I figured I'm going to live a lot of years. It's like, I'm Italian. How am I not going to eat pasta? So, okay, so if I could introduce a pasta serving a week, maybe a pizza or a sandwich once a week, a regular dessert once a week, but not do all those things on the same day, and see how I did with it. And I was able to continue losing weight because I was exercising more and I was enjoying the process. And I felt grateful that I was able to actually enjoy these things in moderation, not stuff myself. And it was simultaneously dealing with the emotional reasons I used to or would be inclined to go and stuff myself again. So it's like recognizing the difference between emotional hunger and actual physical hunger. So it's like that we say,
okay, so, and,
apply
okay,
a
so phase three, we kind of need to move this along. What was the third phase?
Yep.
And quickly?
Okay. Third phase was after about 6 months of doing phase two that I was ready to do a lot more exercise. I lost like maybe 75 pounds by this point. I started going to the gym. I started riding a bike again for the first time in years. I started swimming. And I mean, I was enjoying it. The pounds were melting off. I was looking and feeling good. So I was able to up the calorie budget and introduce more foods and really took this all the way for the rest of that year to losing the 150 pounds. And phase four is basically just an extension or a continuation of phase three. And anytime, you know, now I'm not at a specific weight number on the scale, but I like to say that a range is more appropriate, like what's a healthy range to be in, and try to stay within that range. And if I get towards the top of that range, or heaven forbid go over, then it's time to dial it back to an earlier phase before it gets too out of hand.
Okay. So so speaking to my listeners, what are your top dieting tips?
The top things that I would say is to throw away everything you ever thought you knew or understood about dieting. Start with a clean plate rather than a clean slate. Number one, start with self-love. No matter where you're at, no matter how heavy, no matter how many times you've tried and failed, whether you got to lose 10 pounds or 200 pounds, whatever it is, look at yourself and say, you're okay, you're a decent person, you're lovable. And I'm going to work on this for myself. I'm going to learn to practice self-care, take care of myself, make better choices, get educated about food, learn to make better choices, deal with the emotional stuff, and leave no stone unturned. It's really a quest to improve every area of your life. It's not just I got to lose X amount of weight. I want to lose 25 pounds before Memorial Day or to fit into that wedding dress or or before we go on the cruise. That really sets us up for failure. Like it gives us a timetable. It gives us an end date. This is not something that's short term or short lived. This is something that's going to be for the rest of our lives. So it's got to be something doable. So the diet has to be reasonable. The food choices have to be reasonable. It shouldn't be extreme in any way. I mean, I know there's diets out there that tell you to start the day with a cup of coffee with a tablespoon or whatever of grass-fed butter in it. It's like, who's really going to do that? I mean, I've tried so many different things, and it's just like, it needs to be real. It needs to be adapted or possible in the real world. Like, I need to be able to go out. I need to be able to leave the house. I work. I travel. I like to socialize. Most people do. We shouldn't have to be confined to our homes or engaging in some silly or off-the-wall regimen to lose weight. It's got to be something realistic. So that's what I tell people. Love yourself. Care for yourself. Make better choices. And it needs to be realistic.
Mm. all good things. The self-love component is huge. And in every aspect of healing and improving ourselves, that is the key to all of it. I talk about that quite a lot because I work with narcissistic abuse survivors and who have either never had self-love or had their self-love and self-esteem destroyed. So nothing starts until you really take care of you, love you, and decide you're worth it, right?
Exactly. I mean, it began the day that I finally decided, after dying and coming home from the weight loss facility, looking myself in the mirror and saying, you know what, you're a decent guy. You're a likable, even lovable human being who's been badly hurt. And right now, you're your own worst enemy. Nobody's doing anything to me. Nobody's forcing me to shove this food in my mouth. And all these things, these demons that have been living with me for decades, they have no reason to be holding me back or weighing me down, literally. I needed to let them go. I needed to deal with them.
So what I know you've written several books. What do you recommend that which book do you recommend my listeners start with? And what else do you recommend for them as far as your resources?
Absolutely. I actually, it's kind of counterintuitive, but when you get a book published by a publisher, it's basically the publisher tells you what's going to be. So I would actually recommend reading the second book first. Like, that would have been my first book, The Spiritual Journey of Self-Discovery and Weight Loss. I would read book two first, especially the story.
Okay, so it's called, I have that in front of me, The Restaurant Diet, A Spiritual Journey of Weight Loss and Self-Discovery. Okay, so start with that book.
Right. I mean, that's where the rubber meets the road. I mean, that's the emotional space that you need to be in to have great success with anything.
Okay.
That it's really the intention you go into, that if you go in with the right mindset and the right attitude of love and empowerment and possibility, you can do anything, whether it's lose weight, start a business, travel around the world. And then I would read.
And you have social media platforms too that you use to educate audiences.
I have a blog. It's on my website, Fred Balachi, my name, enterprises.com. I share recipes, weight loss tips, restaurant reviews. I'm also a sommelier, so I write about wine and spirits as well as non-alcoholic beverages. It's a great platform. I also do Instagram. My name, Fred Balachi Enterprises, Facebook. So there's a lot of platforms that I share on. And I also work with a handful of clients and have room for a few others that, especially New Year's coming up, New Year's, new decade, new opportunity to become better versions of ourselves. And I've been very privileged the last 5 years or so. I've helped hundreds of people lose thousands of pounds and take back and change their lives and discover things about themselves and lives that they never even knew existed, that it's a lot more than losing weight, and it's a comprehensive approach and dealing with doctor, nutritionist, therapist, support groups, and me as their cheerleader and personal coach that they have access to literally 24/7 via Skype or Zoom.
And how do we contact you, Fred? How do we contact you for that if we're interested in working with you?
Best ways to find me, you could always message me on Facebook through Messenger, Fred Balachi Enterprises. Also, my website, FredBalachiEnterprises.com, has ways, links, and information as far as emailing and getting in touch with me. And it's really the best gift I ever gave myself was not just losing the weight, but digging deep and discovering who I really was. This is a lifelong journey and one that I'm privileged to be on and would love to take you to the next level as well. So that's something.
Sounds great.
You're so inspirational, Fred.
Yeah. You're so inspirational, Fred. I mean, your story is amazing.
Thank you.
And you've come a long way. Adversity really does calls us to look at ourselves and make necessary changes in who we
right.
are.
I
but
mean,
self-love
was,
is definitely the key. Yeah, okay, so we're out of time. But I do want to thank you so much for sharing your story and sharing your message and your tips, because they're all really important. And so many of us are concerned about our weight. So thank you for all that you do. And it's been a pleasure having you.
Well, thank you, Randy. It was a pleasure, and very happy holidays and a happy new year to you and everybody out there. And I'm here
you.
To help
Thank
you.
You.
Please get in touch with me.
Okay. All right. That's a great way to end it. All right. Have a wonderful holiday and a happy new year, Jill. Thank
you too.
You.
Thank you so much. It's very nice.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. So we are out of time today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.